because she would be to have would have made a decision at your meeting. See, our ward precincts back in the 50s and 60s, they had meetings.
Yeah, the civic club or the ward precinct.
The ward precinct meetings had meetings.
They had meetings in addition to the ward meetings.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When you went to the big Democrat party meeting, you know, like this 75-1, this 75-2, they had they 75-3, had they 75-4. You know, they went all together.
Yeah.
As one big group. But in the community, you had to be organized on the street level, a ward precinct level, so that you could make sure you communicate to people in your area.
Yeah.
See, most folks be piled up at the polls now on election day. Every candidate I have, so many folks working for me. And I tell them all the time, we used to be knocking on doors on election day to get the folk out. Sometimes we have a car out there, we need a ride, we'll take it. I used to have a babysitting citizen here at my house because there was like 75-1 over here, 75-7 right there, 75-2 over there, 75-4. Well, see, if you need a babysitter, we'd have some young ladies here, the teenagers, that would keep the children while you go vote or whatever you want to do. So, see, now, they don't even have a babysitting system like we did back in the 50s, 60s, 70s.
That's what my question is, how you were able to do all this local civil rights work in addition to being a mother. How did you find your time to love that?
Well, see, by the time it got 64,
yeah.
I had children 17, 18 years old.
Oh, okay. So they could serve as babysitters.
But on election day, we had those teenagers. If you needed to want to work at the poll for something, you could leave your children here. We had a program set up to
and you were involved with setting up the program.
And keep your children fighting.
Yeah. Were you involved too with getting the transportation to the polls?
Well, on election day,
yeah.
I ride in my car all day getting folks into the poll.
Oh, so you served
check
as a precinct. Driver.
I really don't serve as a real driver.
Oh.
I check precincts, see if the folks being treated right at the precinct, see if the folks got enough workers, are the workers working, you know, and stuff like that. So we'll go do that then, we'll go back to our polls and work outside the polls. But we check all the precincts right around here.
Okay.
According to who I really wanted to win back in 1959.
Yeah.
And if your candidates won, you would have worked hard all day. If they lost, you would still have worked hard all day trying to get people to vote for a certain candidate.
Yeah.
So that meant that leading up to the election, you would have done a good job getting the people educated to who they were going to vote for before they went to the polls.
Yeah. Right. So there was when they, obviously, when they lost, the disappointment.
Yeah, you'd be disappointed when your candidate loses.
Yeah.
But you know you would have worked hard, you would have done all that you could do to get that candidate elected. And then when they evaluate how the people voted, you could tell in your particular precinct the folk voted good for the candidate. But then in some other precincts, they might didn't vote as good. That's why they lost.
So what would you do with the precincts who didn't turn out to vote as much as the other precincts? Would they be targeted in a certain way?
Well, what you would do is get the leaders, like in 75-2 is on this side of Rochester.
Yeah.
You would go talk to the leaders in those particular precincts. And you could help them as much as you could to get more people registered and do a better job of educating voters on how to vote.
It's, it's just amazing to me the amount of organization that you had back then, that
Well, it's because people respected leaders back then.
Yeah.
But all up in the 70s, everybody wanted to be a leader, so everybody started getting their own little group in different areas.
So that's when the Shelby County Democratic Club broke up, or it wasn't?
It wasn't as strong, because in the 70s and 80s, all these different folk that had belonged to the Shelby County Democratic Club had decided to organize Kennedy Democrat Club, you know, Walker Home Democrat Club, North Memphis Democrat Club. You know, everybody had these little fractions, and you had different leaders that was doing it.
And that's something that I've noticed that looking at different papers on the line.
And see, some of those people that was your top people that you respected as a leader, they had got elected themselves to something, and they just wasn't doing as much work in the groups as they had done in the early 50s and 60s.
Yeah. They formed their own group.
And so some of these other people who were back then, they just formed their other groups then.
Yeah.
Like Melvin Robson got his own little group. Frank Kilpatrick had his own little group. Katie Section had her own Democrat club. You know, so they start getting, different groups start getting organized just for their area. So they could say, well, I own my own governor, so I can get what I want from him. This one here felt like he had hands on the governor, so he could get so much for his area.
Yeah. But did this begin in the late
60s? I would say it didn't really get started doing that until the 70s.
Until the 70s, okay. Sherman told me that with the assassination of the king, that put a damper on.
Because people start being their own. You know, where you were looking up to a leader, everybody decided they could lead, look like, I want to be it.
Yeah. You mentioned the role of young people serving as babies.
Well, see, like in this era, by me being the PTA president at the high school and then serving as vice president at the school right there, Ford Road, all the teenagers knew me. They knew what they wanted. And they know that if it was anything in my power to get a summer job, that I would get them one.
Okay.
So that's why I had the connection with them. So if I needed them to come and serve as babysitters, I didn't have to pay them or nothing. They would just actually come and volunteer their time.
Yeah.
And see, then I had teenagers too, and college students by that time.
Let me see here. You talked a little already about your response that you did, feel like anything that they needed you to do at the NAACP office. Can you be more specific about some of the responsibilities that you did?
Well, see, like right now, I sponsor a Teenager of the Year. They have Teenagers of the Year. And my church sponsors a teenager, and I've been trying to make my teenager be 25 or 30 more children to be this Teenager of the Year. And you have to raise funds to do that. You know, you write members. You really don't raise money. What you do is write a lot of memberships. So you already try to get you 300 or 400 memberships so that you can try to, your child can be the winner.
So the people you recruit as members are the people who...
The people that you know in the community, anybody you know, you can write a membership.
Yeah. And then they would vote on the teenagers.
See, as I got one of these programs here, I can show you
what
I'm talking about. Just a second. This might be something on here you
Okay.
kind of see
okay.
while I go get this up. Oak Grove, O-A-K, Oak Grove, and that's my little candidate right there.
Oh, okay. Teenager of the Year.
No, she wasn't. Let me show you.
Okay.
That's her right there.
Oh,
that's
sure.
Oak Grove Baptist Church representative.
Okay.
So I help sponsor Teenager of the Year every year, and I'm responsible for writing the memberships at my church.
Okay.
And anything to deal with politics, I do that at my church.
And were you doing that with your church in the
50s? I would did all the announcements back then, because I've been belonging to my church about 50 years.
You were what?
I've been belonging, a member there for 50 years.
Oh, you've been a member for 50 years.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So see, now I'm not the regular announcer anymore. I just do the politics.
Yeah.
And the NACP and any other announcements that need to be made that would, you know, where people can know where to get help and stuff.
Yeah, so back in the 50s and 60s, would you just stand up in church and announce, like, that there was an election coming up, or what sort of thing?
Well, that's what I do now, deal with just elections and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Making an announcement. But back in the 50s and 60s, I made the regular announcements for about 30 years.
Wow.
Well, like right now, if anything you want to know about politics, I explain it to you. Our church does not really endorse candidates, but I will explain to you. We have a lady running for judge. We got somebody running for, you know, different offices.
Yeah.
We got so many state legislators running. We got clerks, you know, so many clerks running. And I try to keep them informed of who's running. And that this election that's coming up in August, who'll be running then. And then I explain to them in November, you'll get a chance to vote for the president.
Okay, sure.
So you have to let them know, because some people will think when they go into the polls the first time, they don't need to go back no more. So you have to let them know what kind of election's going on now in August. And what will be happening in November.
Okay. So that was the same sort of announcement
you
did back then.
Uh-huh.
And telling them you can talk to me if you have a question.
And, you know, bring in material that they can pick up. See, like, this is my state legislator. She's running now.
Yeah.
Bible Cook.
Okay.
So then I give you a fan of Roscoe Dixon stuff. He's running for clerk, you know.
Yeah.
You'll just hand out materials so that the people will know who's running and what they're running for.
Sure.
Because, see, like, Roscoe is their state senator. Some folks might want him to stay their state senator. But then you explain to him that he's been your senator for so many years, and now he want to come back into the local community and serve as the clerk, and you tell him why it's important for them to have a clerk.
Okay.
You know. For him to be the clerk, you might have an opportunity to get a job.
Yeah.
Where you might can't get a job in that clerk's office now because he has his friends up in there.
So you would talk about specific candidates,
uh-huh.
and how they would train by being elected through the church.
See, and some folks need to know what the responsibility of city council versus what a county commissioner does, and plus what your state legislature does, what your congressman do. Some people are asked the congressman to do stuff that they city council ought to be doing.
Right. So, trying to get a sense of this, in the 50s and 60s and even now, you wouldn't say, go for this candidate, and you would talk about certain candidates and what they did, why that would be kind of like...
But definitely in the 50s and 60s,
Yeah.
You told these people who you wanted them to vote for.
Oh,
you
okay.
told them why you wanted them to vote for. Why it was important for you to vote, because you don't have any black candidates in these positions. So you need to try to fill some of these slots with some blacks. So you don't have to set it now, because you got blacks in nearly every position now.
Yeah.
So back then, you didn't. So you were trying to get some blacks, because you felt that blacks would be most sensitive to your needs.
Right.
So then, you know, let us take a part in it. So you had more meetings at your church, the ministers cooperated with your whatever program was going in, because more people at that time went to church than they do now.
Yeah, yeah. That and through the precinct clubs,
mm-hmm.
were there any other main lines of communication to the voter? Would you say those were the main two?
Well, I would say you had the PTA.
Okay.
You had the civic clubs. You had the Democrat clubs. and you had your churches and all these different organizations, council and civic clubs and all these people, everybody worked together.
Yeah.
And that means no matter which one of these you belong to, you would cooperate with them. See, I write voter registration every day. I keep voter registration and NAACP membership cards in my car at all times.
Wow.
And you always find one on my table, because my children might bring somebody over here and need to register to vote, so I'll have one laying there waiting on me.
Wow.
And I have NAACP membership cards to encourage you to become a member of the NAACP.
Sure. And you've been doing
that? I've been doing that for years.
Has that been a kind of practice?
See, then the PTAs were strong then. You had a lot of parents that were coming to PTA because they was concerned about their children's education.
Yeah, yeah. And that was another way that you could educate people about the cost. And then Mr. Sugarman, Mr. Webster was telling me that the state board of precinct clubs that were used for political action were also used to carry out the
See, we really all work together.
Yeah. Do you remember at all the candidacy of Roy Love for the school board in 1955?
I remember when he ran, but I don't think I was supporting him at that time,
okay.
So then I can't tell you a whole lot about
it. It seems, am I correct, that the 1959 one campaign was the first one where the black community mobilized on a large scale.
And come together.
Yeah, to support these candidates. And out of that was the one that just Shelby County never had to come over. So forth. I understand, too, that there was a lot of resistance from whites to the candidacy of Sugarman, and that there were even attempts to get white candidates in that race to thin their ranks in attempts to defeat them. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, all I know, I worked real hard, and everybody else worked real hard
yeah.
to get him elected. But back then, it was hard to get whites to support blacks.
Right.
And they just had come to the realization that we had supported them all our life, then they ought to come in and support us with our candidates. But a little while later up in the years, they got some of their support better.
Yeah. In the 59 campaign, did you try to get whites to support
the black campaign? Well, my job was really trying to get the black folks to go vote, and that was somebody else's job to try to, you know, them people that was in leadership. Did more than trying to get whites to vote for blacks.
Sure.
Uh-huh. I was trying to get the black vote out.
Yeah, yeah. I saw too in the, I was wondering, what did your husband do for a living?
My husband drove a truck and worked for Ronco Foods. Ron Cummings. He never did too much in politics and stuff. PTA and none of that stuff. He just went to work because he worked at night.
Were most of the people, black people at the time were working class. And I know that Sugarman and other leaders were middle class. Did that cause any division at all?
No, it didn't, because back then we were like a family. Everybody working together, nobody thinking about because you needed lawyers then. You didn't have a lot of black lawyers and stuff, so you needed them.
Right. So,
and they were real friendly, down to earth. I used to eat as many breakfasts at Sugarman's house as he would even take me to Nashville with him and everything.
Wow. So people on the grassroots level, they were working class. And mainly women. Sure. but in the 1950s, was there much protest in your birthday actually
going on? Well, back then, we were so unintegrated until we had to be trying to get to ride at the front of the bus.
Yeah.
Get to go in the front door instead of the back door,
yeah,
back at that time. So you had emphasis on people trying to get their foot in the door. And trying to get better jobs.
Yeah. And it really seems like direct action became much more large scale after the Synod. What was the impact of the Synod on the black community?
Well, see, the sit-ins were good because blacks would sit it up where you could spend your money. And we buy more clothes than anybody, we buy more cars than anybody, and we spend our money. So when you start picketing a place and don't spend nothing, they lose too much money.
Yeah.
So that's why they would come through, because of the fact that you could close them down.
Right. Yeah, that's what Vasco Smith was telling me, was that the sales dropped on Main Street 41%, and it was when we started hitting them economically.
See, like when they had Black Mondays, didn't nobody go to school. You can't have no school, you lose fair money. The only way you could reach white folks at that time was financially.
What did you think of press coverage at that time?
Well, we had the press center and the commercial media, and they print anybody got killed, anybody got shot. But anything good we did, they could highly print.
What about the Tri-State Defender
in this world? Well, they did good printing, all they could print, but they still had the sales of paper to keep open. So they did real good.
Yeah. Were you involved with the Nonpartisan Voter Registration Committee at all?
I always did work with them.
Okay.
Because the NAACP is nonpartisan.
Right.
It don't endorse candidates. Well, that was farther out that way. I never went to the Lincoln City Club, but that was back there when the people who lived in those areas, like Big Hampton and Way Out. Evers got his own group and started out with his group.
Yeah.
All them other different people, all at one time, all them belonged to the Democrat Club.
Oh.
Then they went on out in their own areas and got their own organization together.
Okay.
And it was just like, you got your group, I endorse who I want, and you got your group, I endorse who I want. O.C. Evers never, in them late years, cooperated with anybody. He just had his own little group.
Okay.
Endorse his own candidate.
Yeah. See that? Well, a little bit in the late 50s, but then it's a much
then
larger,
they split up. Know. Everybody at one time belonged to the Shep County Democrat Club.
Yeah.
Then when they started going to them, getting them different organizations organized, then they went on in their neighborhoods and started getting their own candidates and endorsing them.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes you had to protest, because at one time you didn't have any black officials that much, so you had to deal with protesting to achieve your goal, because everybody that was elected wasn't going to listen to you, because they didn't need you.
Right. So like the Black Mondays, for example, where protesting was necessary, and 6-2 for
busing and all that and all the took. Because we used to get the old books that the white children had wrote in and used. We didn't get new books and all that. And that's what caused the problem with integration and busing.
Yeah.
The common aid system. To try to get everything equal.
Right.
Some folks thought if you sit beside a white child that you was going to learn the same thing that the white children learned. But if you didn't have good, dedicated white teachers, your child wasn't finna learn no more than he was going to learn in the black school.
What did you think of Henry Lowe?
Well, Henry Lowe was, I guess, good in his time. He had some black friends that he worked with, but he was not the best thing for black folk.
Yeah. Were there other white politicians that you liked? You mentioned Bill Morris. Was somebody that you liked?
Well, see, Bill Morris was a person that you could talk to. David Harsh, he was a white man you could talk to. M.A. Hines was a white man you could talk to. You know, he fed people with human at least.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So anytime you found people that would do as much as they could for you, it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. As a woman, did you feel that, I talked to some other women who were active in the Democratic Club, and they said they did experience men who were sexist toward them, and that was a problem at times, and not getting people together. Did you experience any of that?
No, I really didn't.
Oh,
because
okay.
I know I always knew how to keep being. My grandmother taught me how to keep being a distance from you.
Oh, okay.
You know. And you talk to them, and you let them know what you mean and mean what you say. They don't mess with you.
A hard line.
And that's
hard
how to put.
You talked too about how you mentioned the police were brutal back then. Can you talk more about how the police were viewed and what the police were like back in the 50s and 60s?
Well, see, I didn't have any problems with the police.
Yeah.
I taught my children if a police officer talked to you, say yes, sir, and no, sir. You know, be polite to them. Don't ask them a lot of questions. Remember their badge numbers, and if they had their name tags on, remember their names, and then you come and talk to me about it. You know, so I always had high respect for police officers, and you never have problems. If they stop you right now and say you speed, it's no problem you argue with them about your speed. Say, sir, what have I done? And yes, sir, and no, sir, and you won't have nearly as much problems. Sometimes they'll let you go.
So you had strategies.
No, I didn't, because I always knew how to talk to a police officer because of my grandfather. My grandfather always there doing something with folks that talk about Boss Crump's stuff. My uncle was Boss Crump's janitor in some house he had in North Memphis.
Really?
He was the janitor.
Wow.
My grandfather worked with those white people, hauled them up there to the boat, and when the blacks died, to get so they could vote, and lack of cooperation. My grandfather had been a slave, so he knew how to deal with white folk.
Wow.
So we didn't have no problem.
So you have a long history, family history, I'm still full of all of the engagement. That's something too that's striking about Memphis, is that how blacks have historically...
See, a lot of people had a lot to say about Mr. Crump don't lie this, Mr. Crump don't do this, Mr. Crump did that, but Mr. Crump paid my uncle $100 a year for collecting the rent for him, and he had a free house to stay in and everything. And my granddad, when they ran off of Mississippi coming up here, he had 15 children. Every one of them stayed down driving potholes in North Memphis.
Everyone what?
Stayed in North Memphis.
Okay.
And driving potholes. And them houses that they lived in belonged to Mr. Crump. And the rent was $7 a month.
So you had a positive, sound like a positive view of Mr. Crump.
Well, if I found out through my grandfather, if you say yes, sir, and no, sir, to everybody, you won't have no problem saying yes, sir, and no, sir, to the white folk. So it was just a part of me to know how to talk to people. And when you talk to people right, they won't have no reason to start off on you. And you knew how the times where it is, so wasn't no use to you getting smart down here and getting yourself in trouble.
Do you think that's where a lot of problems stem with black people?
Back in that time when you had some that wasn't gonna take the stuff and thought they didn't have to take the stuff and you know, just go to saying anything. And you know the white folk wasn't gonna wanna take it from you. So you just say yes sir and no sir, and that's what my grandfather taught me, and you wouldn't have no problem. So I taught my children the same thing.
Any other questions I have here? Do you think that blacks being in public office has been positive for improved race relations?
I think it's fair, and I think that they have done just as good a job as anybody else could have done, as we got the opportunity, we were effective as everybody else. I was in Montgomery, Alabama when they had, you couldn't ride the bus. We walked everywhere. We went to a PTA convention, and everybody, the cabs, the people who drove their car would let you ride. That's when they was trying to get the buses integrated.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you were part of that boycott.
I was there at the time.
Yeah. How long were you there?
Oh, we was just there for a convention.
Oh, okay. Sure. I guess, how connected were you in Memphis
Well, I just been it there with the local government here in Memphis.
Yeah. So it seems to me that the movement in Memphis was really locally driven, and it wasn't so much like, you know, you look to other cities as to what you should be doing. It was decided here.
Your leadership that you had got the information from the other cities and presented to you in meetings what we ought to be about doing this week or what we ought to be doing this month. You had leadership.
Okay. Can you give me an example of some time when they talked about something national, about how that should affect how the movement is done here?
Well, like Russell Sugar, A.W. Willis, Jesse Turner, Lockett, all those men were aware of what went on in other cities.
Yeah.
And that's how we got our information is through them.
Okay, sure.
There was other leaders, but they were the top ones.
Right, right. What do you see as the differences and similarities between Memphis politics now and Memphis politics back in the 50s and 60s?
Back in the 50s and 60s, you follow leadership. Now, in this day and time, everybody's a leader. Everybody think they know something. So they work in different little groups now. That's the difference.
That's something that's really striking about how much
of a... See, I make up my mind whether I want to vote for Kerry or not. I don't need nobody to tell me we going to bag Kerry. I know whether I want to bag Kerry or not. Because I read up on what Kerry does and what's in the paper and what they doing in Massachusetts. Stuff that folks try to blame him for that.
So people do a better job of educating themselves and relying on leadership. What were some of the major challenges that you faced back then? You mentioned one was some people were apathetic. What were some of the other challenges you faced to engage in political activity?
Well, I was so active in political activity, so I never had a problem because I stayed involved. I didn't miss no meetings, hardly like I don't miss no meetings, hardly now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm always involved with candidates.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything else that, you know, we haven't talked about that or anything else that you want to add?
Well, the only thing I could tell you that that's different now than it was then. Back then, in the 50s and 60s, we followed leadership. We looked up to leadership. We expected the leaders to bring us the best candidates and tell us all about them, and expected them, if we needed something from the candidates, that they would get it. But now, in this day and time, I talk to the candidates myself. I know exactly what each one of them going to be expecting. My city councilman, my county commission, the judges in this city. I know approximately what each one of them is going to do, because I'm always, I don't miss a meeting. Going to something like it's a jury, she's having a campaign fundraiser this evening over to the Union Hall. So after a while, as soon as you leave, I'll be going over there.
Oh, sure.
And on Union.
So it sounds like you experienced a personal change.
So then I deal with the candidates on an individual basis more now than I did back then. So like Saturday, we have this Democrat Party opening. The chairman of the Democrat Party has already called and asked me to be at a meeting at 6. And the regular meeting starts at 7.
Okay.
So whatever plans they have that they want us especially to do Saturday, they'll be telling us Thursday night at 6 o'clock what they want us to do. Then they'll have a regular meeting at 7 where all the members take a part.
Yeah, as I observed with other people who I talked to were active in the 50s and 60s, their political and civil rights work was ongoing.
Well, see, I still go.
Yeah.